Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
And good evening, good afternoon, and welcome to Talk of the Rock. I am your host, Jared Griffin, and I am joined today with Senator Gary Stevens and Representative Louise Stutes to talk about the legislative session, the short, brief legislative session last week, and other things as we head into the summer. So good afternoon, Senator Stevens and Representative Stutes.
How are you?
Good afternoon, Jared. Good to be with you.
So let's start off just by talking about the legislative session itself. I know a lot of people around here and even some of your colleagues were a little concerned about reconvening everybody in Juneau. Senator Stevens, can you give us a little bit of context or background? Why were you called back and talk about your experience last week?
Well, sure. Now, we had tried to solve this problem in order to get monies out to the cities and boroughs and fishermen and all the entities as quickly as possible. You know, it's not our money. It's the federal money and passing through the state. So our one solution that we had was to move it through the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and they did that through what are called RPLs. So that money was advanced. So then we were sued, a lawsuit against us, saying that we should be doing that, making that decision as a legislative body, a Senate and House meeting in Juneau. And I think that's right. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we tried to do it quickly in order to get that money out. It didn't work, so we did have to come together in Juneau. It was a fairly short experience, but it was good, I think. You know, the way it worked out. A lot of precautions, a lot of concern about COVID-19, and want to make sure that everyone was protected. So the Juneau Fire Department was there to take our temperatures when we walked in the building, all of the legislators, representatives, senators, and staff. They did that. And, of course, the Capitol is closed to any outsiders. The public could not go into the Capitol at the time because of that. So anyway, it worked out fairly well. I think everyone in the House and all but one in the Senate wore masks. So there was hopefully no transmission of the virus between us. But it was done as well as possible. I really appreciate the volunteers or volunteer fire department coming in and taking our temperatures. They gave us little tabs to put on our lapels to make sure that we had been tested that day for temperature. And it was a simple enough thing. I mean, some people took the wrong side of it and thought it was, one representative said it was like the Holocaust, being tested and checked and being forced to do something you didn't want to do. But it was pretty benign. And I'm glad we did it. So what we did is that we passed that that amount then. We sent those CARES monies through the legislative process. And I think we did the right thing. The real concern is if we had gone through the normal legislative process of having going through a appropriations bill, we could have been there for weeks or even months, you know. So, Louise, you want to pick it up there? I think it was a good experience.
I think it was, and I think that insofar as reconvening, as the senator stated, the main objective, at least for myself and for the senator here, as he just said, was making sure we could get the money out as quickly as we could to the communities. That was a priority. And we could have convened a couple weeks earlier, but the magic number is 11 and 21, and we just didn't have enough people that were willing at that point in time to go back to Juneau.
And, you know, those monies have already been started going out. Friday, the first checks went out. I believe the city has received, City of Cody has received some of its funds, and we'll expect those small business loans or our grants to continue. And so I think we made the right choice and try to help businesses and individuals and fishermen as they're facing the difficulties caused by this COVID-19.
Yeah, I think the rapid response, the quickness is going to be appreciated even more. I think there was a story earlier and that the Alaska Department of Labor released their unemployment data over the weekend. And of course, it doesn't look good for Alaska. For Kodiak, our unemployment rate jumped to 10.6% last month, and the number of jobless unemployment claims doubled to over more than doubled. So, yeah, it's I guess it's good to hear that some assistance might be on the way.
Well, just to comment on that.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
We have no idea what's going to happen here with this COVID-19. Alaska has been lucky so far. Kodiak has been lucky, but if we base this on what's happened in the rest of the country, we could be facing a 20% unemployment in Alaska, and that would be pretty devastating. So it's just crucial that we get monies out to people. You know, we did put the money in the budget, then we passed it, $1,000 permanent fund dividend, and it looks like that money will go out early rather than in fall, but actually go out here like in July. So people will get some funds to help them through this the crisis.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. I should note that even though Kodiak's unemployment rate for April was 10.6%, it's still way below average for the state, which is hovering around 14%, I think. So we're doing good so far. Let's see. You brought up RPLs. Now, I don't consider myself a policy wonk, but, I follow the legislature, fairly well. And this is the first time I'd ever heard of RPL. Representative Stutes, do you mind? Can you talk to us? What is an RPL?
I sure can. And I'll try and make it as simple as I
right.
can. A lot of this stuff, I'm telling you. An RPL is a revised program legislative process. And since the legislature is only in session for part of the year, the intent of the RPL process, codified in the late 1970s, is to provide a constitutional method to accept additional funds for items already approved in the budget from non-state sources that become available after the session concluded. And of course, there's exception to every rule because we were in recess. But there's really two steps necessary for an RPL. Number one, the current fiscal year budget must be included in the language specifying which funds can be accepted, and the governor must follow the process outlined in statute to submit the RPL to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for review. And then if the additional funds for existing budget items is included, the process is followed and the Legislative Budget and Audit can make recommendations. And it's non-binding. And if the governor doesn't like what the Legislative Budget and Audit does, he has 45 days to respond to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee and say, well, I don't like that, so this is why I'm doing this. And if the budget committee doesn't respond, then after the 45-day period, the governor is free to disperse the money as he chooses. The caveat here is it has to be something that the state has already received outside funds, and in this case, federal funds, for previously, which brings into play the school bond debt reimbursement. The school bond debt reimbursement has not received federal funds, which is why it was eliminated from applying any of these this first time based on the parameters put out by the feds, why we couldn't apply the federal funds to the school bond debt reimbursement. Now, it's a pretty complicated program, and that's about as simple as I can make it.
Well, it is complicated, but let's take an example of, say, the Marine Highway System. So, say we had budgeted money for the Marine Highway System and we got some more money available and we could increase that amount. That can be done through the Legislative Budget and Audit, and they can approve that. It's something we've already passed. So that's all it is, really. But it gets really complex, and there are some things that we simply could not do because there had not been a budget item in certain areas. So That's what the legal challenge was, and I don't feel bad about the lawsuit. I think all they said is that you need to go through the legislative process. So once we realized that we could not do it through LBNA, then we met as an entire legislature to do that. Realized too, we could have gone through the entire process of an appropriations bill, but as I said earlier, that would have taken a lot more time. Could have taken weeks, even months. A lot of argument about and a lot of amendments that could have come about. So what we did then was simply to move ahead with approving what LBNA had done, and I think that was the right thing to do. So money's has already gone out. It'll continue to go out, and people will have those funds to help them through this situation.
And so we can receive money for things that we're already getting some federal funds for, and it had to already be included in the budget. So things that Governor Dunleavy vetoed would not be would not qualify to receive this funding. Is that correct? Also,
correct. And it's not this budget. It was the 2019
right.
budget.
Correct. That's right. Yes.
Right. So, yeah, it's and the lawsuit, as the senator said, I'm sure, is it was all based over the legislative's power of appropriation. That's our number one obligation, and there was a differing of opinion initially on whether legislative budget or not it had the power to make the appropriations when we were still in session, even though it was on recess.
So we're really not even sure that this satisfies the folks who brought the lawsuit. I mean, they could still continue that, and in fact, I think they have said that they would prefer it to go through an appropriations bill. But that would have been a terrible mistake. It just would have taken too long, and we'd still be here arguing about where the money goes. Mm-hmm. At least we've reached the point now that the money has started to go out. It'll continue to go out. And there'll be more funds coming. Actually, the city has received its first tranche of money, I believe. And the city of Kodiak has made the decision to help local businesses as well. So, even though we're talking about these small business loans, that small business is anything with under 50 employees, even though we've been talking about that through the small business applications, the city can also use some of the funds it's receiving to help local businesses too. So I'm glad they've moving ahead to do that.
The city is getting about, I think, $11 million in community assistance, and the borough, I think, around a little over $5 million, I think. I should have brought those notes with me. So I think there's been some confusion, it seems, at the local level about what are the parameters around using the federal relief funds? What exactly can they be used for? How can they be distributed? Can you clear up any confusion about, what those parameters are? And is it dependent on, a department or RPL, I suppose?
Well, let me just start this out to say I was on a teleconference with Dan Sullivan, and the key phrase is whatever you use those funds for, the suffix is directly related to COVID expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all in how it is stated, because anything that is COVID-related, it pretty much is a legitimate expense. Would you agree, Senator?
I sure agree with that. That's been one of the problems that the cities and rurals are facing, is that they've been told they can only use it for issues that are connected with COVID. But it also appears that they may be able to use those monies, for example, maybe the city of Kodiak could say, we're going to pay our police department, our fire department, we're going to pay that entire bill for this year from federal funds, and then that would release monies that they could use in other areas. We're not actually clear. I mean, this is not a legal opinion, and I think that the cities and boroughs need to be very careful, because they should be very wary about this because they could have to return funds that the auditors, these are federal auditors, look at how they spent the money and say, no, that's not legitimate. So we need a further clarification from the federal government on what is the legitimate use of those monies and are there ways to work around it. Like I said, like Louise had said, it has to be COVID-related, but can you use those monies to release, to relieve yourself in other areas of your budget? So we're hoping that a very liberal approach will be taken to how our communities can use those monies and how our schools can use them as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the federal auditors. I'm assuming there's already an annual process for federal auditors to come in, and they'll just add this into everything else that they audit. That's how it's going to be assessed and enforced.
But as you can imagine, I mean, there, never so much money has been sent out to our communities in mm-hmm. the past, and the auditing process is going to be very long and very very hard, and just I don't know, multiples of maybe 10 times what they had to do in the past. So these federal auditors will do an annual audit, but there'll also be monthly reports by the communities as to how they spent the money.
Yeah, that's what will take place is the reports that are submitted monthly by the communities will then go to the state. And if there is an annual audit, the state will provide those figures and numbers which have previously been provided by the local communities for the audit.
So you brought up a really important point. I mean, if the monies are spent and the auditors say that they should not have been spent on those issues, then it's really the state that's on the hook, and we may have to pay back those bills. Of course, we try to get it out of the communities that misspent the money. I think it just means people need to be very wary, very careful how they spend those monies, and really, hopefully, we can get a very definitive answer from the federal government about what is allowed. As you can see, I mean, a lot of communities have lost revenues. We've got lost revenues here in sales tax, and fisheries tax, possibly, and even in property tax, if people can't pay their bills. So that's the question. Can they use those funds for lost revenues? And that's the big issue communities are facing right now.
Well, and to add to that, the federal government is well aware of the complexities that have been created by their own parameters, and they're working on them because I know that there are several states. Aside from Alaska, all the states are facing this crisis, but there have been several lawsuits instituted by other states against the feds directly related to how this money can be distributed.
We've talked about money for local municipalities and grants for small businesses. Included in House Bill 313 was $50 million in grants for the fishing industry. How do you see that being played out? What kind of grants are we looking at there?
That is an unknown as of this moment.
Okay.
Because they have to go through and figure out all the sectors that are going to be included in the distribution of those funds, and then, of course, how they're going to distribute it. Because, you know, it'll be processors, harvesters, the whole gamut. And so it's going to be a real concern. I can tell you on the side of the small business loans, which I might mention that the one thing that the RPL process did is it took the small business dollars from loans to grants. So they will be grants. The question now is, as we all know, particularly in this community, our fishing fleet are a multitude of small businesses. Do they qualify for those loans? I've been directly dealing with the administration on this, and as of Friday, I got a text that said they believe that the CFEC permit would qualify them to qualify for a grant, a small business grant, you have to have a business license. Well, fishermen don't get a business license. Consequently, they've determined the administration felt that the CFEC permit would qualify them. Well, then it went to ADA and the Department of Commerce, and they're not so sure. So it's still up in the air, and we're working with them to allow our fishermen to qualify for those small business grants as well.
And we're talking about $100 million, so it's
right.
pretty substantial. And,
right.
and if that money could get out to our fishermen, if there was a way to do that, for them to be considered small businesses, it'd be a real advantage for people
right.
in our community.
Look and see if I got a text back.
And then kind of related to that is also the $29 million in rural transportation costs, including the Marine Highway System. Is this for to increase routes? Is this for maintenance?
It hasn't been determined.
Okay.
All we're going to get is $5 million, and our administration seems to think that the working group is going to be the end-all for the Marine Highway System. I'm hoping it is, and I'm hoping that there will still be $24 million of transportation money, and my hope is that we can get a good portion, if not all of that, allocated to the Marine Highway System.
It's been a real fight, and of course, we know how crucial the Marine Highway System here is in Kodiak, but also throughout my district and Louise's district. It's just really a crucial means of transportation, and we've all tried to work hard to protect it, and we're hoping that the funds become available.
Yeah, especially now during transfer season. I think the ferry is back up. The Tustee is back here next week, and I mean it's getting booked. So, all right. Well, we got a few minutes left. Let's talk about the future. If there's another round of federal stimulus, will you need to reconvene again, or do you already have that process in place?
Well, it just depends on where the money goes and how it's how it works with the budgets we now have. If something we've approved already, we can again go through LBNA and do it that way. But if we can't, if it's something new, then the legislature will have to meet. And we're capable of doing that. We're pleased to do our job as we promised, as we swore to do. And if we have to go down to Juneau again, we will. But, you know, I mean, I was sort of, last night some friends were complaining about what it costs for the legislature to go to Juneau, and that is true. I mean, there's 60 legislators to all fly down there, and it's an expensive process. We'd like to reduce those costs if we can. One of the things I've always wanted us to do and had a bill that was that never made anywhere, but it is to allow us to meet by audio conferencing during a crisis of like the one we're now facing. Many states do that. They have audio and visual video conferences in order to vote. You want to make sure it's very carefully done and protected and there's no abuse of the system. But even the United States Supreme Court and the Alaska Supreme Court are meeting by audio conference. So there's no reason, I believe, why we can't do that during a time of real crisis.
And in between the time when I was talking with your aides last week and we were scheduling this show, Governor Dunleavy announced that the state would be reopening. What are your thoughts on how things have gone this past weekend and your thoughts on reopening?
Well, again, we're very lucky, you know, that we have had a limited number of cases, a limited number of deaths. But I think people, it just seems to me that people need to be vigilant and careful and make sure that when you're in public that you keep a distance from other folks, that you wear a mask, that you wash your hands. I mean, all those things have helped to keep Alaska the low end of other states. So. It is concerning when you see news reports of the New Jersey Boardwalk and some of these other places where people are gathering and we're not paying any attention to those rules. But we keep hearing from the medical profession that it's not over. It's still here. It's still dangerous. And, you know, we've got thousands of people who come into Alaska every year for the fishing industry. That causes concern. You know, I think six of them have brought COVID-19 with them. You know, I know the governor is anxious to open it, and we need to make sure that our businesses survive, but it just means we have to be very, very cautious, very careful about how we handle this.
I think that I'm speaking for Kodiak in particular, Basically, overall, you know, I think that most business owners are pretty cognizant of what it's going to take to maintain their business. And I think that their clientele will pretty much dictate to them to what degree. I know that there are some businesses the clientele absolutely will not wear a mask, and there are other businesses where the clientele won't go in unless they're wearing a mask. And that's going to dictate, I think, a lot of what transpires under the certain mandates that the governor has or does not have.
Right. We have about, it looks like 2 minutes left. What I think I'll just maybe toss it back to you. What are, is there anything that you would like to plug, to remind us of over the summer? We missed our Crab Fest this weekend, and it would have been a great weekend to have Crab Fest. But what are some of the things that you would like to plug and maybe get some help with?
Well, I'm really concerned about education, K-12 and the university, and I want to applaud the Kodiak Island Borough School District and what they have done in terms of lunch programs and dinner programs. I mean, they have stepped up and made sure that kids don't go hungry, and I appreciate Larry Ledoux, Dr. Ledoux's efforts to make sure that kids are fed in our community. But there is a problem, you know. I mean, how kids are not getting the education they get when they're in a classroom. It's hard to do distance education. It's just really been a problem, and I'm not sure how we can catch up in this coming year as things calm down a little bit, you know, as we go back into the classroom. If that should happen in the fall, how are we going to make sure that kids aren't dropping out and are missing what they should be getting at this stage in their life?
And my plug, of course, would be for the Alaska Marine Highway System. That is my number one objective. And if you're going someplace, you want to go over to the mainland, it's a lovely ride. Book a trip on the Alaska Marine Highway System. We need to make people understand that it truly is a useful mode of transportation, and we need it, and we need to maintain it.
I will hopefully be moving a daughter up to start at UAF this fall, and we were hoping to take the ferry and do a road trip up there. So,
good for you.
We'll see if that becomes a reality. I sure hope so.
And I tell you, it's really nice. Even when it pulls into Kodiak, if you don't want to go anywhere, go down and have a meal on the boat. It's delightful. I rode it out to Dutch Harbor last year, and every community we stopped at, the community met the ferry, and they came down and had hamburger and fries or whatever they had on the menu, and then went back home. It's really a delightful experience.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Gary Stevens and Representative Louise Stutes, for spending a half hour and kind of going back over all the work that you did last week.
Thanks, Jared. Good talking to you.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sure appreciate it.
This has been KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 to hear more about local issues and organizations.